Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Good morning, Beth Ann.
Good morning.
We're going to be hearing the word sustainability quite a bit in this show.
That is true. That's true. And not quite exactly by design, but sometimes things just happen that way.
That's right.
And maybe that's all to the good. Now, our first conversation, well, you know there may still be many jokes about tech geeks, but there's little funny about the need for clear public policy on science and technology. This week, Dr. Neil Lane is in Honolulu to engage in a discussion about how to translate science into public policy. He is the former assistant to the President for Science and Technology, the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, and he was the National Science Foundation director under President Clinton. His visit this week is part of the Hawaii Pacific University's lecture series on global leadership and sustainability, and he joins us in our studio this morning. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Beth Ann. I very much appreciate you having me in this morning.
Well, you're in Honolulu to talk about those challenges of translating scientific knowledge into public policy. But even before we get to how that happens, science seems also to be confronted with some challenges with how to communicate outside of its own community. What do you think is missing in that communication link?
Well, I think there are a lot of issues to deal with. The scientists themselves, I'm a physicist. I certainly, for most of my career, never thought much about getting out with the public and explaining what I was doing, either because I maybe thought they didn't care or that wasn't what I was about. I would say in my more recent career in Washington, it became so clear early that we really needed scientists to get out more with the public and to communicate. I would call it dialogue. I mean, not a lecture, but a dialogue in about ideas that people care about so that the larger public knows that scientists are not just stuck away in their laboratory. They actually hope that what they're doing is good for society.
It used to be in many, many decades past that science utterly captivated the American imagination. How do you see that happening now, or maybe not?
I find people still are quite interested in science, and you know, their TV shows, Big Bang Theory, Bill Nye the Science Guy appeals to young people. Neil deGrasse Tyson and his Nova series Cosmos it draws an audience, but for the larger public, I think it's the distraction of life today. It's fast. And it has all kinds of challenges that families, individuals are facing, particularly those in underserved communities all over the country, all over the world. So I don't think it's an anti-science so much as focusing on other things. But I find people still very interested. The recent discovery or detection of gravitational waves, happily in the 100th anniversary of Albert Einstein writing down those gravitational wave equations. Okay, it's taken 100 years. It's quite exciting. A lot of people have talked to me about that just on the street.
Also, that being talked about now is what happened last week with the Supreme Court when it temporarily blocked the president's clean power plan. Do you think that move is more damaging to U.S. energy future or to the president's legacy?
Well, I think the president's legacy on climate change is going to be very clear, very positive. It's quite extraordinary what he's gotten done. In spite of strong, almost total opposition from the U.S. Congress. The court decision was disappointing to many of us. It was a 5-4 decision, as many other disappointing decisions have been in recent years. We don't know ultimately how the court will act on this. This is a temporary hold. But the downside for the country is significant and for the world because it comes right on the heels of the Paris Agreement. And our own negotiator, Todd Stern, who was part of the striking those agreements, has said publicly that if the court should go against the president's clean power plan, that it's likely to pull the rug out. I'm not using his words, but pull the rug out from under the Paris Agreement. Nations need to be able to trust the United States that we will, in fact, abide by our agreements.
In Hawaii, we now have the agreement that we're going to have 100% of our renewable sources from which we derive our energy by the year 2045. And as we are speaking, the Hawaii Public Utilities Commission is weighing the issue of how Hawaii's utility will or won't go forward with the proposed merger with NextEra. And then we should say that your trip here is being made possible by a grant from Hawaiian Electric Industries, and you'll be speaking tonight at Hawaii Pacific University. But if you have to just step back for a moment and take the long view of Hawaii's energy future, what do you see?
Well, I think many of these issues have been around a long time. So I'm 77 years old, so I've lived through a lot of not identical but similar parallel situations. We had the gas wars, for example, the oil embargo from OPEC in the 70s. I remember the long gas lines and concerns about that. I remember President Carter's major initiatives in energy that then were all wound down by and large by his successor once the price of oil went back down again. So we've been up and down over the decades about this issue of energy security, protecting the environment, and all the related health and other social issues that connect with energy, its production, its use, the need for energy efficiency, all those things. So that part is not new. What's new in my view, and I'm really in awe of Hawaii making that kind of strong commitment, because I'm not aware of any other state, even though some states, like California, trying to make progress. Nobody has made that level commitment. And so that's a leadership role. That's leading by good example. And given Hawaii's unique situation geographically and in its east-west corridor, I think people will pay attention. So well beyond Hawaii's ability to control its own emissions and use energy more efficiently and at lower cost, it sends a signal to the world that I think is very significant.
How do you think we'll actually get to that point? What do you think has to be part of that portfolio?
Well, clearly public support. The public has in the Hawaii public has to continue to believe it's sufficiently important that whatever sacrifices, if there are some, that might need to be made along the road, they'll do. My sense is in the long haul, in this electricity we're talking about right now can be delivered cheaply using primarily renewables, but that requires building up a significant infrastructure and working with the existing grid, and there are a whole set of policy and practical technological issues to be addressed. So the public has to continue support, and they have to elect people to office who will continue to make that commitment.
Meanwhile, looking at what has been happening with oil prices, and you brought that up just a moment ago, you know, people forget pretty quickly. And when prices are low, it's really easy just to think that that gravy train is just going to continue on forever. We're watching big cars and especially big trucks having some big sales numbers in the last 6 months, year. And certainly that's happening here in Hawaii, too, when we got this tiny little space where all these cars are. Do you think that somehow, you know, this is going to thwart the ability to understand that the whole energy policy has to feed into itself and work seamlessly?
Yeah, I think those bumps have occurred in the past. So when the price of fuel in particular is low, why people buy the big cars and the big trucks, and that's why it's so important that there are standards, fuel standards, emission standards, and those just need to get tougher and tougher and tougher so that these bumps are smoothed out a little bit when they occur. We can't tell the public what to buy and what not to buy, and that's not our democracy. But we certainly can put in place regulations that encourage efficient use of energy and clean use of energy. You know, Hawaii could be the electric car state of the future. You know, Hawaii can control its environment in ways so the energy can be produced from renewables, and the electricity can be appropriately stored and transmitted across the country, and you could end up with an increasing number of electric cars, which would be a wonderful example again for the rest of the world. But meanwhile, there are going to be these bumps depending on the price of oil.
And we shouldn't kid ourselves about that part. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to your talk later tonight.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, Beth Ann.
Dr. Neil Lane was the assistant to the president for science and technology, the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, and also the director of the National Science Foundation under President Clinton. He's now a senior fellow for science and technology at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. And as we mentioned tonight at 5:30, he'll speak at Lohatero Marketplace about the challenges of translating scientific knowledge into public policy.